You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, rambunctious, regal riddlers and rattlers. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 116. And of course, I'm your humble host, Karen. We are your quintessential quizzical quartet of qualified, quotable questioners.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
Okay, so guys, I have a question.
Yes.
What?
Last time we had the World Cup, we had Paul the Octopus.
Yeah.
That was the, I don't know how you describe
psychic.
It. Psychic octopus.
Prognosticator.
That it predicted the World Cup victors or of different matches. How did it do it? Like, they gave him two flags or something. He chose one.
Yeah.
Magic.
Yeah. I think there was food in two boxes and he would choose the two boxes.
Was it? I thought, yeah, it was, there were flags.
He was motivated to open one of the boxes somehow.
And one of them is assigned to a country.
And he was uncannily accurate.
Mm-hmm. For like a couple of matches straight. And Colin, you said he passed away.
He did. Paul the Octopus died. I'm not sure what the lifespan of your average octopode is.
That's when you're a psychic, though. That puts a lot of stress on your
brain. It's true.
Eating those little flags, probably not good for
just,
the octopus.
The joys of nations riding on your many shoulders.
Right,
on
right.
your eight shoulders.
It's a heavy
burden.
It's a heavy weight. Yeah, exactly.
It
was just flag poisoning.
Flag poisoning.
They were poison flags.
I think they did a Google Doodle for him, actually.
Oh.
They had a little octopus with a halo, like looking down from above.
Eight halos?
just one halo, yeah.
But don't fret, you guys. This year, for the World Cup, we have another psychic animal, and it is a clam.
Sure.
Its name is Clam.
Clam.
Clam the Clam.
Clam the Clam?
Clam the psychic clam.
It's pretty on the nose.
Clam the psychic clam.
I'm not sure how it predicts which country will win. I think it comes out of a shell. I'm not sure, but it already eerily predicted a couple of wins.
Yes.
And as of this week.
As we sit here recording, it has predicted that the U.S. will beat Portugal.
Oh, well.
So we shall see.
Pardon me while I bet all my money on it.
By the time the show airs, the clam will look pretty smart or pretty dumb.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I still don't get how it's predicting, though.
It kind of, like, sticks out its clamminess.
Clam head?
Clam tongue?
Is it a tongue? Is it a tongue?
Or body?
Is it a pod? Is it, yeah.
Right.
It sticks out sort of the, you know, the business end of the clam.
The business end. Sure.
And what? And then what?
And then, like, it chooses between, like, two flags. Yeah.
Oh, really?
So, pretty soon there'll be the little clam with the halo on the Google.
Oh, no.
The flag poisoning. They really gotta get on top of it.
What a weird thing. I don't know. Why are people obsessed with, like, weird animals, psychic animals without bones? Anyways. All right. Without further ado, let's jump into our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hot Shot. Here I have a random Trivial Pursuit card, and you guys have your Morning Zoo radio buzzers. Here we go. Let's answer some questions. Blue Wedge for geography. What country is home to the dingo fence? Colin?
Australia?
Correct.
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Not a trick question.
Yeah. Not a trick. The note here says, the fence was built to protect sheep herds in the southeast from wild dogs.
Huh.
Or
huh.
dingoes.
Or dingoes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Dingo fence.
It really, literally.
It's the fence for dingoes.
Pink Wedge for pop culture. Who sang Lost in Love, All Out of Love, The One That You Love, and Making Love Out of Nothing at All? Chris.
This was Air Supply.
Correct.
Yes.
Air Supply. Cool. Yellow Wedge. What two Italian immigrants were executed in 1927 after a notoriously biased murder trial in Massachusetts?
Oh,
Dana.
Sacco and Vanzetti?
Yes! Good job. All right. Purple Wedge. What everyday object did Marcel Duchamp submit to a 1917 exhibition with the title Fountain? Colin.
This was a urinal.
Correct. All right, Green Wedge for science. What word is both a shade of blue and a make of compact car?
A make of compact car.
You'll get there.
Yeah.
Sky, foam, Azure,
Sea, Navy. Sea foam. Cyan. No. I feel like we're going to feel really dumb.
Maybe.
Starts with a C.
Oh. Cobalt.
Correct. Oh, yes. You guys do. You guys know Sacco and Vanzetti.
Never heard of the word. Never heard of cobalt. Well.
All right. Last question. The Orange car. Wedge. How many rolls yield a 7 with a standard pair of dice?
Oh, how many different rolls?
It just says how many rolls.
Oh.
3?
Incorrect.
What?
They mean like every combination. So 1, 6, 2, 5,
yeah.
3, 4.
Oh.
Right.
Right.
So is that then 4, 3, 5, 2, 1, 6?
It depends on if they're counting 4, 3, and 3, 4. I think they're looking for 12.
They're looking for 6.
6.
Oh, okay.
So they're looking for
3 on each dice.
Yeah. 1, 6, 2, 5, yeah. 3, 4. 4, 3, 5, 2. Yeah, okay. Okay. Right.
6, 1. 6.
Right.
The odds are.
That's a bull-bull-me question.
Well, good job, brains.
Cool.
I guess. Today's episode is solely based and designed around Chris's experience. Chris last week went to the press junket or the press opening of the new part of the Wizarding World of Harry Potter Park in Orlando, Florida.
Yes.
The Diagon Alley new edition. So this week we're going to talk about amusement park attractions, roller coaster, food, culture, and of course, Chris's special report back from the new Harry Potter Park. So everybody strap in!
Yeah, so I went to the Diagon Alley expansion of the Harry Potter, the Wizarding World of Harry Potter in Universal Studios in Orlando, Florida. Now, Karen, you and I had gone to the original opening, and that was the original Wizarding World of Harry Potter, and now 4 years later, they have opened a new expansion. It is in a different park. So if you're like familiar with like Disneyland and California Adventure, how there's two separate parks and you have to buy a ticket, let you go back and forth. You have to do that too for this because, Hogsmeade and Hogwarts are all in Islands of Adventure in Universal Studios. And then Universal Studios Florida, the official name of the park, has the Diagon Alley part and they're far away from each other. And how do you ride from London to Hogwarts? Well, of course you take the Hogwarts Express.
Whoa.
And so they have built out this facade of real world London. So they've got King's Cross Station. You go into King's Cross Station and it looks like a London train station at first. And all the people working in there are just sort of playing the part of like, we work at a regular old train station. And so then you kind of wander, you know, up the platforms in the train station. And then before you get to the Hogwarts Express, they have set up this whole thing where you get to walk through the platform, the 9 3/4 platform between 9 and 10, you walk through the wall.
You
and
do?
How do they do it? So they have set up a sort of mirror illusion so that the line sort of curves around. And as you're curving around in line, you see all the people in front of you. And they're all walking through the wall as far as you can see because they've kind of set up the mirror so that you see the person and you see a wall and they're sort of blending together. When you get up there, it's just it's a passageway.
But someone's watching you
and then of course you can take pictures of, you know, people. You can take a picture of yourself walking through the wall. It looks really good. They've done a really good job like creating that illusion for you. And then you can ride the Hogwarts Express, and that in and of itself is like an experience because you have your own private car. They have like domed screens on the windows, so they play a video because what you would be looking at is like the back lot of Universal Studios.
Really breaks the illusion.
Sometimes there's nothing much happening on the video screen. That's when on the other side, it looks like you have like frosted glass doors on your car. And what you will see is the shadows of Harry and Ron and Hermione and people walking by and having conversations.
Whoa!
As if you're like really taking the Hogwarts Express and other students are passing by.
So in itself is a ride pretty much.
Totally
not just
is. Yep. Absolutely an experience to take that. And then that would drop off to the other side of the park. Diagon Alley itself is, I mean, it's like more elaborate. The buildings are so tall that you can't see anything passive. Other than Diagon Alley. So, you're
so
really
Chris, I want you to pretend like I've never read the books.
Oh, okay.
Which should be easy for you.
Yeah.
What is Diagon Alley in the books?
Diagon Alley is a wizards only shopping street
okay.
that is hidden in London.
Okay. Okay.
And so it's perfect for the amusement park because, of course, fundamentally, they're trying to sell you things there, and that really is what Diagon Alley is for. It's like, it's where all the Hogwarts kids go to buy their school supplies.
Got it.
Wands for sale, and Hogwarts robes, and of course you can buy all this stuff, and Quidditch gear.
So it's already built around commerce.
Oh, it is. Oh, very much so. You can buy all of your Quidditch balls, and, Quidditch. You can actually buy Weasley sweaters. The looking like the hand knit sweaters that Mrs. Weasley makes for Harry and Ron. Oh, yes. You can go to Florian Fortescue's ice cream parlor and get butterbeer ice cream. And of course you can get butterbeer and you can get special like actual beer. Butterbeer is non-alcoholic, but then they do have actual alcoholic beers that they sell there that are specific to even to Diagon Alley. There's like Wizard's Brew, which is a stout. And Dragon Scale, which is a lager, and Amstel Light, which is Amstel Light.
And Amstel Light. So the big question is, for me, not only is it a place of commerce, mm-hmm. but they actually do have a ride.
There is a ride.
And that's in the bank.
It's in the bank. It's the Escape from Gringotts, the bank of Harry Potter. Yep. Once you probably wait through the 5-hour line of people outside of it, you know, once you get into the lobby, they've just got rows and rows as if you're in an old-timey bank with the bank tellers, but they're all animatronic goblins. Mm-hmm. And they don't interact with you. The one up at the front talks to people, and then the other ones are just busy at their work, but they're super creepy because they're really lifelike and incredibly kind of realistic. You know, there's other line experiences, and there's little story things. Snippets of telling you like what you're doing, because while you're trying to open an account at Gringotts, that's when it's set at the very end of the books when Harry and Ron and Hermione are breaking into the bank to try to steal a certain magical object.
But you're there by yourself.
You're there
on the premise of I'm opening an account.
Exactly.
Just so happens it's the day that
and they're going to take you on a tour of the vaults, but it all goes wrong. And it's not as, I mean, you went on the other Harry Potter ride with me, Harry Potter and the Forbidden Journey.
Yeah, in
which
the castle.
Like, flips you almost upside down. Yeah. Not completely upside down, but things
come out of your pockets.
Yeah. And like it inverts like, you to the point that things can fall out of your pockets for sure.
So all that stuff is in Gringotts.
And this new ride does not do very much sort of changing of your position. It sort of rotates you around a lot. But the height requirement is smaller, so more younger kids can go on Gringotts, but it's pretty thrilling. It is crazy in terms of what they're doing technology-wise, because like a lot of it is kind of like these massive, massive screens that just sort of envelop, like, you know, it, like, encircle you. And you're wearing 3D glasses. So you're really feeling like all this stuff is kind of happening in front of your face, even though it's on these sort of like huge screens. We've all been on like motion simulation rides. There's a big screen and the cart's just moving a little bit in front of it. Like, this thing is on like a roller coaster type track. So it really is moving around. And there's one point at which it actually does drop you. And then the next time, when it's fake dropping you, when it's just sort of leaning the cart forward and like showing you a screen of you falling with the ground rushing up at you, it's like you believe it more because they've already dropped you. Yeah. So it's like, am I falling? What's going on? I'm not really sure.
I love roller coasters. So exciting.
Yeah, this is not as dramatic as a roller
coaster.
Just
seeing,
but it's
like, I think for me, I mean, we've all been on roller coasters, either wooden or steel, and then, you know, for a while they change it like, oh, you're sitting down or you're lying down.
You're suspended.
They kind of change it up. But now this is like a new age of attractions where they're combining either 3D or screen technology with roller coaster, with swiveling, with animatronics. It's just all of this kind of combined together just blows my mind, of it.
Remember, this ride is very new. It's lots of moving parts, and the park's not open yet. It's not opening until July 8th. We were almost at the end of it, and it all shut down. There was a door that we had to go through that only opened partway. And if we had gone through, there would have been bad. So they had to shut the whole thing down and then sort of move the door back into place and move it out of the way again and make sure everything was perfect before they started the ride up again. And we were stuck in the dark because all the screens shut off. 15 minutes.
Oh my God.
With no real understanding of like, what is the problem and like, what's going on?
Someone
and everybody
puked.
Was in back of us, but Helena Bonham Carter and Tim Burton were in the ride with us. So they, I don't think they were thrilled about.
Hey, this is why you have a soft opening.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. That's it's the preview. Yep. The scariest thing was when they started the ride again, they didn't like start it off slowly. Like when the ride starts again, it just starts again. Yeah. Yes. So basically we were supposed to go through this tiny little door that we had not gone through and there was just pure blackness back there. And they were like, attention. The ride will begin imminently, you know? And then it was just like, went from 0 to 1,000,000 miles per hour in a second on a
into
broken
pitch
ride.
Black.
Blast, yes, into pitch blackness. And there's no lights and there's no projections in there. And of course, the car whirls and spins around. So I'm like, I'm gonna die. I'm gonna get splattered all over the Harry Potter ride.
I love you, Helena Bonham Carter.
I am the rider who lived.
For me, I love roller coasters. I love thrill rides. I love all of that stuff. I try to go out of my way to experience all the new coasters.
Yeah.
So definitely Disney parks are my kind of mainstays, but I've also been to Great America in Jackson, New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
There's the Batman ride, which was the first one I remember as a kid that I rode on that was like the sitting down with their legs dangling roller coaster.
Yeah.
Oh my God. When I was studying in Pittsburgh at Carnegie Mellon, I would take the 4-hour bus ride to Cedar Point, Ohio, which is the roller coaster capital. They have so many from old wooden ones to new ones. Millennium Force was a good one. There's also Kennywood, Universal, definitely. I mean, the Hogwarts Castle ride is one of the best rides.
Yeah.
In terms of like, not like just roller coaster, but just overall. I love Radiator Springs, which is the new Cars.
Yeah.
The Cars ride. Tower of Terror in Disneyland, Disney World is my probably most favorite.
That's a free fall.
That one's fun.
That's a free fall.
Yeah. No, we went on Tower of Terror and like, I didn't know. I didn't know what it was. Yeah. I mean, I know something is going to happen. And as they're, I'm like, oh, okay. I think they're going to drop me, you know? Yeah. But like, I really didn't know at the beginning, like, what was actually going to happen. Yeah.
You didn't see the people screaming at the top of the building. And
I heard them.
No. Yeah.
I've been on free falls. I've been on like steel coasters upside down. Oh, SeaWorld Orlando had a really great one called the Manta, where you're lying down on the car. And it goes through the tracks. And so you're pretty much your whole body is like flat and you're face down.
Like Superman.
Yes. But the scariest ride that I've ever been on, it's defunct now. It was in Disney World in Magic Kingdom in Tomorrowland. And it was there in the 90s. It was the old Mission to Mars. And they changed it. And what was called was Extra Terror Restorial. Extra Terror Restorial.
And it's,
Alien Encounter. And the premise of the ride is it's not a ride. Mm-hmm. You sit in a circular auditorium, basically. Every row is like a concentric circle. And when you sit down, you get strapped down with roller coaster like safety things.
Okay.
You have like a seatbelt and you have like an over the shoulder thing. And I'm, as a kid, I was like, oh, are we going to move? But there is no moving in this ride. So the whole story is this company called XS Tech is doing an open house because they perfected like some sort of teleportation technology. And in the middle of the auditorium is like this tube and they, teleported in an alien by accident. And the alien is kind of like an alien xenomorph. It's a dangerous alien. The alien escapes. The power goes on and off. And then you see shattered glass like in the middle of the tube. You're like, oh no, the alien's somewhere. It's all mood based. It's all sensory. It's kind of dark. In your seats, they have a very separated stereo speakers. And a lot of the audio is, it's called binaural sound where they record using two microphones instead of one.
Uh-huh.
So it gives you a 3D feeling when you're listening to sound. You actually can sense if people are close to you, walking around you. It was done so well. Even really subtle heartbeats or subtle like aliens moving around, like the footsteps, you kind of can feel the vibrations through the ground. And there's this, kind of the climax is the alien is behind you, but you can't move. You're stuck in the seat and you can feel it breathing and drooling on your neck. And it was all done by the seats.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I've been on speed rides. I've been on falling rides. I was crying and I wanted to leave. I know it's fake, mm-hmm. It was so scary and so realistic, so well done. Wow. It's not like some of the rides where you go watch it like a 3D movie and there's spritz water on you.
Yeah.
It was gross. It was scary. The alien actually kills the electrician. And the electrician screams it's dark. They splatter water on your face to simulate blood.
This sounds really intense for a Disney.
This is why they, after a couple years, super intense. I think it really went against the grain that all Disney rides. I mean, they kind of have a G and PG rule.
Yeah.
This was not this
psychological horror.
I still have nightmares about it. It's just so, especially the binaural. It's like sometimes when you get your hair cut and you feel the scissors a little bit close and you hear it and it sends chills down your spine.
Right, yeah.
It's like that. And we've talked about Disney and Lucas before. This did have some sort of a Lucas tie-in too. Oh. So when they did a preview of it, it was a very tamed version. Michael Eisner, the then Disney CEO, was like, no, this is too tame, not intense enough, turn it up to 11, which they did. Mm-hmm. Lucas had his plan for it because they did ask Lucas to come in and maybe a consultation or whatever. And he had his idea, which was even scarier in a way, kind of Twilight Zone-y. It just didn't really work because it was too complicated of a story to tell. In the waiting area, they had comical robots and they would joke. And so, as a kid, I was like, oh, haha, I'm just going on a space ride. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden someone's killed in front of me. And
that's how I felt about the movie Event Horizon. I had no idea it was horror. I was like, oh, it's going to be space. And then at the end, I was like, what?
It's so scary. So there you go.
Extensive. Yeah. I can tell we just sort of scratched the surface there.
I love it. I'll go on any ride.
I have a challenge for you. I'm sure you're going to be up to it. Okay. I have a quiz for you guys. It's called Roller Coaster or Heavy Metal Album Name. It's going to work like this. If you think this is a roller coaster, put your thumb up. Thumbs up. And if it's a heavy metal album name,
thumbs up.
The rock.
Oh, Devil Horns?
Devil Horns.
Nice.
You at home should try it, unless you're driving. Don't do it when you're driving.
All right. The Afterburn.
Oh, man.
All right. Colin, Chris say roller coaster. Karen says album. It is a roller coaster.
Yeah!
At Carol wins. How about antelope? Okay. Karen and Chris say roller coaster. Colin says album. It is a roller coaster.
Yeah.
It's also the name of a band. So you're not wrong, but that's why it's album. I'm looking specifically for albums. Okay. How about Rust in Peace?
Rust in Peace.
Rust in Peace.
That's too extreme.
Album. Everybody says album. It's an album.
Okay. Thank goodness.
The Megadeth album.
Okay.
I wouldn't ride that roller coaster.
I don't know. Yeah. Tetanus and death. I don't know. Yeah.
Black Mamba.
Oh. Mm. Is there a both?
Everybody says ride. It's a ride. It's also a band. Okay. Name of a band. I couldn't find an album with that name. Yeah. Black
Mamba. I've heard of it.
Mm-hmm. How about How about Too Fast for Love?
Too Fast for Love.
That
would be a great roller coaster name, but I gotta go with album.
Yeah. Everybody says album. It's an album.
Okay.
It's like a classic Tunnel of Love ride, but extreme.
Yeah.
How about Hall of the Mountain King?
Oh.
Hall of the Mountain King.
Okay, so Karen says roller coaster. Colin and Chris say album. It's an album.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How about Buzzsaw?
This could so easily be both.
Yeah.
The thing with roller coaster naming, how far is too far?
Right.
When it invokes some sort of horrible death, it's that's too far.
Yeah. Our lawyers advised us against this one.
But this one, I feel
Buzzsaw.
Everybody says rotating. Roller coaster. It is a roller coaster. Yeah. A dream world. How about massive killing capacity?
I really hope
yeah,
we're right.
I feel like, yeah.
And he says the heavy metal, yes, it's an album.
Just see that above a roller coaster. It can kill so many people.
Yeah. How about Steel Dragon?
Now that's tough.
I'm not going to overthink. Yeah.
Everybody says roller coaster. It's a roller coaster.
All right.
But what about British Steel?
British Steel.
Karen says roller coaster. Colin, Chris say album. It's an album.
No.
But what about Steel Hog? And Hog is spelled H-A-W-G.
Steel Hog.
Yeah.
I don't know anymore.
Yeah. That's the problem with these quizzes. You stop being able to tell what's real, what's not anymore. Karen says album. Colin, Chris say roller coaster. It's a roller coaster.
Wow.
Ride the Steel Hog.
Is it somewhere in the south?
Indiana Beach.
Hog.
How about a destroyer?
Destroyer?
Yeah. Colin and Chris say album. Karen says roller coaster. It's an album. Last one.
Far.
The Dominator. Dominator.
Dominator.
Everybody says roller coaster. It is roller coaster. It's also an album. Good job.
Dominate okay, destroy not okay.
Massive killing capacity right out.
No.
Yeah. So I found out something, not to bring this party down, but something that kind of depressed me.
Okay.
One of my favorite parts of Disneyland is, of course, Billy Hill and the Hillbillies.
Oh, yeah, they're not there anymore.
They're not there anymore! Yeah. No, Disney
I
got
went to their
they,
last,
they retired. Oh, you did?
Yeah, I went to their last performance.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Sorry for the non-Disney people.
Yeah.
They're like a
jug band. Yeah. They're like a throwback, you know, country band.
They're not the Bears.
No, they're the real people.
Okay.
And they sometimes play at like Thunder Mountain.
The barbecue.
What is it? The barbecue and stuff like that. Right. Oh man, there's this one, this guy's name is, and I looked it up to find it out because he was my favorite Disneyland person, Whistlin' Rick Story. That's his actual name. Well, I mean, not Whistlin', but, you know, Rick Story. He's the guy. I mean, if you've been to Disneyland, like, he plays the banjo and he whistles, like, incredibly well. And he sings and he's really good. So anyway, Knott's Berry Farm hired these guys.
Oh,
that makes sense.
So, and now they're called, I think they're called, like, Crazy Kirk and the Hillbillies. And so now they're working over at Knott's Berry Farm. So if you want to go see them, that's where you can go.
The new Hillbillies.
Right, yeah. But I got
the new Hillbilly experience.
I got to thinking about, you know, stuff that used to be at Disneyland. And I was kind of looking at, you know, oh, well, what, you know, attractions used to be at Disneyland and are no longer there. And I discovered something really interesting. So there was, for the first like 10, 11 years of Disneyland, there was a little store called the Art Corner. And it was in Tomorrowland.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of information on the web about it, but there is a great extensive blog post at a blog called 2719 Hyperion. So check that out. And that's where I got a lot of this because there wasn't really that much else. In Tomorrowland in 1955, when Disneyland opened, basically it was a store that sold postcards, flip books, art supplies, how to draw Disney characters books that actually they reprinted the actual, like, the models that the Disney artists would use for Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck. The Art Corner also sold cells. It sold original cells from animated Disney productions.
Oh, not the kind of recreated or
No, actual cells.
For how much?
Well, I'll get to that.
Oh, okay.
So cells at this point and certainly prior to this, they weren't really valued by Disney or any of the animation houses. In fact, like it used to be because the sheets of acetate that they would, you know, paint the cells on were expensive.
Yeah.
After the film was finished,
they'd clean it up.
They'd wash them.
Yeah.
They would put paint remover on them and wash them and use them again and again and again for more cartoons. And then eventually, when money became less tight and the acetate became cheaper, they didn't reuse them. They just threw them in the dumpster.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Just threw them out. And so the guy who was placed in charge of the retail part of Disneyland, who was basically tasked with like, okay, figure out what is the retail presence at Disneyland going to be. He realized, you know, to his credit, like we're chucking stuff in the dumpster on a daily basis that we could sell.
Oh,
like
yeah.
These are products we could just set out at Disneyland. People, of course, they would buy these because
part of Disney history.
Yeah. We just put it up as like, you know, it's a
cool,
you know,
art
it's a,
thing.
Right. It's a Disney original. It's an original. It's not a reproduction. It is a piece of art that was really used in the making of a Disney film. And They did, and they sold them anywhere from, on the low end, $1 to $5. Now that, today, that's like selling them from $10 to $50 or thereabouts, which still would be super cheap. So they're not, $10 today is not a terrible price to pay for a souvenir, but like you could go in there and they had a shipping service. So if you wanted to get souvenirs for people and then send them to them, like you just get them and then they would just put it in an envelope and mail it out for you right from the art corner.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
They would cut them down to size so they would fit in a small, like a smaller mat. Uh-huh. And then they'd mix them together randomly. So like somebody says that he has one that is Mary Poppins with Donald Duck on a background from Paul Bunyan.
Wait.
Yeah, they would just take the cells and just layer them on top of each other and just sandwich them, but randomly.
Okay.
Yeah, and then
that's where it seems a little half-assed to me. I'm gonna
really?
Say
it
that.
Really
like,
was. Yeah,
it seems like an art project. Yeah. Like somebody's like, I'm gonna make a nice picture for you.
Well, because there was no thought of we need to preserve
gonna
these.
Gonna recontextualize this Donald Duck.
It's about man and nature, and so that's why there's Mary Poppins and Donald Duck.
Yeah, and he has no pants. But you know, Disney historians believe that the Art Corner, which operated until 1966, that you know that is a key reason why like the cells we have today are even out there in the first place. Like it played a major role in preserving all of that stuff because Disney was like, we'll just make a buck on these. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Would be great if they still operated an Art Corner in Disneyland and sold your original cells for $10.
No
but
way.
No, oh, man. Sorry. Yeah.
We don't even use cells anymore.
Oh, no.
That's why.
Right, exactly.
No one
uses
cells anymore.
Like, they sold Lady and the Tramp cells in Disneyland.
Bit by bit by bit by bit. That's amazing. Yep. Wow. And those have to be thousands and thousands of dollars.
You know, actually, the ones, because they did actually sell a lot of these things because, you know, they were a cheap souvenir. So, it does depend on, like, you know, if you want to get something that's like iconic characters in an amazing looking pose that's really from the movie, you'll probably pay four figures. But, you know, you can still buy some of these for like anywhere between 100, 200 on the low end for some.
If you're willing to settle for like a Dopey instead of a Snow White.
Right. Or even an even more minor character than that, basically. Yeah. Yeah. We were considering, oh man, there was a cell of Robin Hood and Maid Marian like walking off out of the forest together. Yeah. And my wife and I were just like, should we buy this? It's like $2,000. It's like, no. Because we love Robin Hood. That was one of the first, you know, when we first started dating, she didn't have Robin Hood on DVD. And neither did I. And we bought it for each other.
Aww.
We both accidentally bought it, you know, for
the Golden Magi, but
we didn't lose anything.
No,
we just lost $10.
I got your
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
You're listening to Good Job Brain. Smooth puzzles, smart trivia. Good Job Brain.
And we're back. You're listening to Good Job Brain, and this week we're talking about amusement parks.
Yes, well, I have assembled for you guys a grab bag general trivia quiz about amusement parks and the rides and the foods and the things that are in them. So.
We gotta get our buzzers ready?
Yes, please. Get your buzzers ready. Karen, you lived in Denmark, right? For a little while. So you may have a leg up on this question.
All right.
The oldest
continually operating amusement park in the world is in Copenhagen, Denmark. Mm-hmm. Tell me, did it open in 1883, 1783, 1683, or 1583? Chris.
1683.
Incorrect.
Dang.
Dana.
1583.
1583.
Wow. Holy cow.
Yes.
Was it just like two pieces of wood and a rock?
They hadn't even invented fun yet. It's just a park for the first 100 years. The Dyrehavsbakken, or just Bakken, I guess locally known, oldest, yeah, continual operating park in the world. So originally it started off as like a natural springs, like a health and sort of wellness and revitalization spot. And then just, you know, as a place that drew a lot of visitors and tourists, slowly over time, there were, you know, craftsmen and entertainment and rides
like
and things like that.
Wow.
Right. And, it has been operating in some form or another for hundreds of years now. Yes. And they are still quite popular from everything that I have read on the internet. Six Flags.
Yes.
Amusement Parks is the largest amusement park company in the world. They have 18 properties in North America. Tell me, where does the name Six Flags come from?
Oh, man, I read this once before.
What are the six flags? Karen.
I think it's one flag for every continent.
Not a bad guess.
Except for Antarctica.
That is incorrect. Okay. Incorrect. I'll give you a little bit of a clue here. The original park from which the chain now takes its names was Six Flags Over Texas.
Yeah.
Which opened in 1961. The Six Flags and Six Flags are the flags of the six nations that governed over Texas in Texas's history.
Okay.
So France, Spain, Mexico, the Republic of Texas, the Confederate States of America, and finally, the United States of America.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, it gets a little political there.
Yeah.
Towards the end.
Yeah, right. More so toward the end. You're right. What modern amusement park ride is the descendant of cavalry training for knights in the Middle Ages?
Cavalry training? Like for riding knights. On horses? Right.
Uh-huh. Oh.
Chris.
The merry-go-round?
Yes. Yes.
Oh!
The merry-go-round or the carousel.
Uh-huh.
In fact, the word carousel goes back to at least the 1600s, if not earlier. It's related to the French word carousel, a tilting match, and the Italian and Spanish words garosella or carosella, meaning little battle.
Huh.
And so
because you used to like ride the merry-go-rounds and like try to catch a brass ring or something like that,
yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm. So, I yep, mean, that's right.
It was a game of skill.
You're right.
Skill
it was a game of skill and coordination. It was an old practice for knights to gallop in circles and, you know, toss objects or grab objects as they were going.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently the carousel was introduced to Europe around the time of the Crusades, and it goes back centuries to Turkish and Arabian horsemen, and it was like basically a mock enemy training simulator.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
And it's like the dippiest, like, you know, most childlike ride, and it was originally used to pretend to kill people.
Little battle. Yeah. What is the claim to fame of the Takabisha roller coaster in Fuji Q Highland Amusement Park in Japan?
The Fuji Q roller coasters are said to be pretty sick.
Isn't it tall? Or
yes,
Dana.
It inverts you the most times.
Chris,
what is it's called? The Takamichi
Takabisha.
Takabisha.
So tall.
Tall. Is it the tallest roller coaster? Is it the highest?
It's got most inverted, highest drop. Yeah. Karen, want to take a guess?
Oh, you're saying highest drop.
I mean, you guys are all dancing around the right thing here.
Most,
yeah.
Longest zero G.
Okay. You were all close. It is the steepest drop of any roller coaster in the world.
Okay.
Now, it took me a while to wrap my mind around this. It has a drop of 121 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
So, meaning it's past 90 degrees.
Whoa!
So, 90 degrees would be straight down.
Oh.
Yeah.
This is actually inverted a little
bit. It's concave.
So, you are actually upside down relative to the steep drop.
Oh.
Whoa!
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah, that is a sensation I have.
How could we get any steeper?
Yeah.
Oh, we can.
You're just going to come all the way back around eventually. Right. Rye Playland in Rye in New York State is one of the oldest amusement parks in the U.S. I've been there. It's quite charming. It was featured prominently in what movie from 1988? Karen.
Oh.
big.
Yes. Yes.
I was going to say Warriors, and I remember that was Coney Island.
Oh, I love the way you're thinking, though.
But big.
Yeah, big. It substituted for the Sea Point Park, which at the end of the movie is where Josh finds the Zoltar the Magnificent to undo his previous wish. It's been in a lot of movies, actually. It was in Muppets Take Manhattan. It was in Fatal Attraction. It's very scenic. Like, it's what you think of when you think old-timey amusement park.
Yeah,
cool. Yeah, very charming.
Is the Great Zoltar still there?
No, that was just for the movie.
Oh, they should have built one.
And it doesn't actually grant your wishes, though.
It will not actually make you an adult. In a 2005 survey by the International Association of Amusement Parks and Attractions, amusement park visitors were asked to name their favorite amusement park food.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out on top with 28% of the vote was what? Dana.
Funnel cakes.
Yes!
Oh, wow!
Excellent, yes!
It's the best.
I agree. It's my personal favorite.
Best. Yeah.
What would you say? What are your guys' favorites?
I was going to say that people would guess corn dogs.
I love corn dogs.
So here are the top five. 28% said funnel cake. 17% said ice cream. 14% said pizza. 13% said hot dogs. 12% said cotton candy.
Those are all things that, I mean, except for cotton candy, the other stuff is like you can buy at home.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like an amusement park. Like funnel cake.
Pizza.
You don't really buy at home or make
it at
home.
Yeah. I don't know that I've ever had a funnel cake outside the context of a carnival or an amusement park or, a fair. All right. Well, good job, guys. Just get your amusement park palates wet there.
Gross.
Calling all kids in the car. Brittany and Meredith here from the chart-topping Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast. Are you dreading another silent car ride with the fam? We've got the cure. 3 rounds of fresh trivia every single week. Movies, music, even science and Disney. We've got something for every trivia buff in the car. No more crickets chirping on those long journeys. The Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast is your secret weapon for connecting and laughing with kids of all ages, teens, toddlers, adults, it doesn't matter. Spark their curiosity and challenge their brains with every episode. New episodes drop weekly wherever you get your podcasts. Search for the Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast and turn those car rides into epic adventures.
And we have one last segment. So the other thing I love about amusement parks, you kind of mentioned, is the food. It's like the best excuse. You're like, I'm having fun, so I'm going to eat some crappy stuff.
Things
that are bad for my health because I'm on vacation. So here I have a quiz about amusement park food and kind of their origin. It comes to no surprise that a lot of this stuff, the origin is disputed, right? You have all these other different fairs saying, I invented this and I invented this. So there are a lot of theories, and I'm just saying, that's kind of my disclaimer. So first question, get your buzzers ready. In some parts of America, this popular carnival food item is known as a pronto pup.
A pronto pup. Corn dog?
It is a corn dog.
Yeah, okay.
Corn dog actually had a U.S. patent in 1927. So I'm going to quote part of the patent. It says, when impaled on sticks and dipped in batter, then deep fried in vegetable oil, the resultant food product on a stick for a handle is a clean, wholesome, and tasty refreshment.
Wholesome.
Well, it's tasty. Yeah. I will agree. It's tasty.
I don't know about clean and wholesome.
Yeah.
I don't eat a corn and be like, wow, I'm so refreshed.
This was quite a clean, wholesome meal I just had. It's more like,
like before a big run, Karen,
Feel like
it's more like, I hate myself a little bit, but that was delicious.
Like I've just showered under a waterfall in the forest.
Refreshing.
You rub the corn dog on your face.
All right. Number two. In one popular origin theory, this aromatic dessert was in part inspired by the Chinese food item known as you tiao, which literally translates to oily stick.
Churros.
Correct. It is churro. Couple of theories, but one of the theories is a lot of explorers who went to China and saw youtiao, which is a more of a breakfast food item. It's more savory. It really literally is just a fried, pulled, long stick of dough. But it's not really seasoned. So when they brought it back, the theory goes they made it into a dessert. They would sprinkle sugar on it, and they didn't really get the pulling right. They just kind of extruded out of a star-shaped die.
Okay.
So it has that funny shape. All right. This snack first debuted in Disneyland. They were made at the Casa de Fritos restaurant in Anaheim, California.
Fritos, right?
No.
No. Or nachos.
Another brand name.
Oh, Doritos?
Doritos.
That's right.
Doritos. We talked about this invented in Disneyland. The restaurant basically used extra tortillas they had, cut them up and then fried them, seasoned them, and then that was kind of the prototype for Doritos. Next item. You cannot find this amusement park favorite in grocery stores because they cannot provide the extreme cooling requirement to store this item. That's why they're abundant in amusement parks, in their own cooling and customized compartments.
Oh. Oops.
Dippin' Dots.
Yes!
Yeah.
Chris is right. Dippin' Dots, known as the ice cream of the future. Ice cream that is flash frozen in liquid nitrogen dot by dot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you eat it collectively as separated dots. And when you put it in your mouth, it melts and it tastes like ice cream. It's... I don't feel like there really is an extra advantage of having your ice cream come in
dots
and dots form.
It's like the astronaut ice cream. It's like the value is the novelty. You know,
well, the astronaut ice cream doesn't need refrigeration.
True.
Right?
True.
This requires special refrigeration.
Dippin' yeah. Dots were sent here from the future as a warning.
Normal ice cream is
things
good.
Things get worse.
Yeah. Like, this is your future unless you change what you're doing.
Last question. Traditionally, corn oil, sugar, and salt together is cooked in a Dutch oven to make what popular snack? Dana.
caramel? No.
No.
What is it?
Corn oil, sugar, and salt cooked
is that
in a Dutch oven.
Corn, oil?
Corn oil.
Corn, oil. Yes.
Oh, corn.
Kettle corn?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's why I thought it was corn oil. And I was like,
corn, oil.
Corn, oil, sugar, and salt would be gross or delicious. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Oh, I can see how
that's like
is
some
caramel.
Kind of syrup.
Oh, okay.
Snack. Yeah. Right.
Kettle corn.
Yeah.
Kettle
in the copper pot. Okay.
Yep. A Dutch oven or a kettle. Fun fact. So, you know how you can buy kettle corn in like the microwavable pouches, and you put it in your microwave and you have kettle corn, you pop them. That actually does not contain sugar because when you microwave sugar, it will burn really easily.
Yeah.
So most kettle corn that you buy for microwavable kettle corn is made with sucralose and artificial sweeteners because it doesn't burn.
Right. It won't just burn up.
Yeah, actual kettle corn is actually really hard to make because you have to keep stirring it to make that little crust and have the sugar not burn.
Yeah.
But
that's one of those great like self-advertising foods as well. Like, you know, when you're at like a county fair and you can just like follow the scent all the way back to where is that coming from?
And that is our show about amusement parks. Thank you for joining me. And thank you guys for listening in. Hope you learned a lot of stuff about thrill rides and food and Disney and metal albums. And you can find our show on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, and on our website, goodjobbrain.com. And thanks to our sponsor, Harry's at harrys.com. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.